Hi, welcome to the UCB Theater podcast for the week of June 6th, 2010.
Now, don't tell me, your name is John Frusciante.
You got it, finally. Good. Congratulations. Yes. And you are Will Hines.
That is accurate.
I read it before I came in. That's
good.
How I knew.
Good. And so...
Sitting in the studio with us this week is our special guest, John Lutz.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for coming in, John.
I'm glad I could be in the studio.
Yeah.
The studio that is essentially a bed tent.
It's like, let's describe it. It's four pieces of plywood with felt on them, folded around us like a fort with a green screen over the roof.
That's right.
In one of the UCB classrooms, huddled around an inexpensive microphone. And seriously huddled.
Yeah.
Like, we look like we're broadcasting from a trench in World War II to get air support.
Yeah. It's the podcast equivalent of The Diary of Anne Frank. Can I say that?
It's just as important. So we usually talk about shows at the top here, John. So we have shows happening at the theater this week. So what do we got?
This Wednesday at 8 o'clock, we have Simon Amstell in performing his stand-up show, Do Nothing. Simon Amstell is a UK comic. Uh-huh. He was the former host of Nevermind the Buzzcocks, which is like a music trivia show. On you familiar with it?
Yes.
Yeah, he was a former co-host of that show. He's hilarious.
How do we score that one?
He's coming over to America and wanted to do some shows. And so he's doing a couple of shows here, the 9th and the 16th. But he's hilarious. You should come check him out.
I'll do it.
Okay, good.
And then at 9:30 the same night, we have the Big Lake screening, which is the Comedy Central sitcom that stars Chris Gethard and...
Chris Parnell, Horatio Sanz.
Chris Parnell and Horatio Sanz, being done by some of the Funny or Die guys put that together.
Yeah.
So that's big for us. We Gethard, obviously, big UCB star.
Yeah.
And then everyone in that show is great. And then a bunch of UCB people featured in it and helped to write for it and stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to show the pilot episode that
We're night. Showing a couple of... I don't think it's the pilot. We showed two episodes... Actually, it might be the pilot because it wasn't
done.
I don't know what it is.
Right,
it's going to be two episodes. They'll be hilarious.
Okay, and that's free.
Yeah.
It's going to be Big Bang Theory is what you're
talking about. It's going to be big bait and switch. Like, it's actually, we just need a focus group for Big Bang Theory.
Right.
And the best way to do that is to say it's a free screening of Big Lake.
Yeah.
The show that hasn't started yet.
An interesting side note about this is that they'll be recording the laugh track of the
show.
So if you come and you laugh, your laugh might be used on the TV show.
I went to a They Might Be Giants concert just trying to get on their live album, so this would be one step higher in terms of closer to social acceptance. All right, and then what else do we have here?
Oh, this week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we have Sketchfest 2010.
Good heavens.
Yeah, you know we have this every year. Some of the best sketch groups in New York City all piled together over three nights to do their shows.
This is like, doesn't Sketchfest happen like in a bunch of cities and a lot of these guys kind of do like a sketch circuit? Like they sort of tour the country, they do like Seattle Sketchfest?
Yeah, Sketchfest has, San Francisco, Seattle, places like that. Yeah, and this is the New York arm of it.
Oh, right.
And it's got a bunch of the best sketch groups in New York City. Murder Fist, Elephant Larry, Sidecar from UCB, Best of Friends that had a show here at UCB for a while.
Right.
Tom Davis, a former writer for Saturday Night Live, will be doing his one-man show, 39 Years of Short-Term Memory Loss, where he talks about what... He was Al Franken's co-writer.
You're right. They were together.
Yeah, he's going to talk about that experience.
I'm going to ask him, didn't they do a movie called One More Saturday Night or something?
You're going to ask him that during the show or before? Or?
From the audience. okay.
So that's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, starting at 7 o'clock. You can get full festival passes or just day passes or individual show passes on ucbtheater.com.
Sounds great, John.
Thank you.
Okay, so those are the shows for this week. So check those out. Mm-hmm. And
now we move on to the fun.
Yeah, let's do that. So we don't even do a break anymore. We just keep talking. And
we just
move
fucking,
into this?
You know what? Let's just keep talking.
I missed 1 week and everything changed.
Do you want to do a break?
Yes.
Okay.
Someone tell me why I do the things. Okay, good. And we're back. So now we are here with John Lutz. John, thank you again for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.
It's my pleasure to be here.
So let's just start at the beginning. How did you get into doing improv and comedy and everything?
Oh, sure. Okay. I was going to school at Valparaiso University in Indiana, and a friend of mine knew I liked comedy and knew I was thinking about getting into acting and performing again in Valparaiso, and he heard about the Second City. And was like, we should go there. We should go on a double date. And so we went. And the first show we saw was Where's Your God Now, Charlie Brown, which was in the ETC, and we went on a date, and I didn't know that, like, that it existed. I thought Second City was stand-up. Oh. I didn't know what it was, really. I didn't know anything about improv at all, but I saw that and was immediately, fell in love immediately with the show. I think Stephen Colbert was in that show, and I'm not sure who else. Ian Gomez was in that show.
Now, did you say, were you doing, like, theater or anything in college?
Not yet. I did a lot of theater in high school. And then when I went to college, I felt like I had to get a real job or try to have school for a real job. So I went into business and then almost flunked out of school.
Right. Yeah, that strategy works a lot.
Yeah.
Pretend to be interested in something because it's practical.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went and saw this, and I was just like, oh, you can do this.
So right away it, like, really hit you with something
cool. The second I saw it. And then...
So what do you think it was? Like, it's just... Was it just... I mean, I've been to the ETC stage. Is it just like the I don't even know how to describe
the magic of it, or
like the professional look of it? Is it the actors?
It was that you could do. I loved Saturday Night Live growing up, and I loved Monty Python, and I loved all those sketch shows that you would watch on all those weird British ones you'd watch on PBS.
Right.
and I just never thought that that was something you could do. I knew you could do plays. I loved doing plays, and I loved that kind of stuff. But I didn't know, because Second City is kind of like SNL on stage,
right,
with a full review and improv mixed in. So I didn't know, and I was a complete, like, novice of it.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is an option of something somebody could do with his time.
Exactly. Yeah. Didn't know you could pursue that, and that could be a job you had.
Yeah.
And then once you saw it, you were like, this is what I'm pursuing.
This is what I should do.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then I saw, like, I went back there and saw another show, and then anytime I would come. My grandparents lived in Chicago, so anytime we would come back for Christmas or Thanksgiving, our whole family, I'd get all the cousins and aunts and uncles and everybody to go out to see a Second City show. I'd organize those field trips.
How did that go over?
They loved it. It was great.
Oh, good.
If ever I talk my family to do something, it's always like a disaster.
We lucked out.
The whole time,
they're
like, why this?
The first show we saw with my whole family was Pinata Full of Bees, which was Rachel Dratch.
One of the legendary.
Adam McKay and Scott Adsit. And my dad was like, well, that guy, Scott Adsit, that guy's the... He makes the show, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just lucked out because...
Great show to see, yeah.
Because if you would have seen one of the... Because Second City every once in a while is a little...
Sure, yeah.
You know, it's show to show.
Yeah.
But that was like a knock it out of the park first time.
Mm-hmm. We should say... We didn't
how
even
did
say...
the how did the double date work out?
Oh, horribly.
Okay.
I remember... I don't even remember who I was on the date with. I don't remember the girl. It was,
I'm picturing her trying to start conversations with you and you're like shoving her aside being like, would you please excuse me?
Yeah,
this
I'm trying
Stephen
to
Colbert guy is making amazing. A reference to Clinton up here. I want to see this joke.
Yeah, no, I don't remember. That's really sad. That pretty much shows where my mind was. I'd rather.
You have a lot of details about the show.
Yes,
that you
right.
Remember,
none about
not
the date.
Well,
that's how most dates work out. Yeah. I feel like.
People who get into this world, that's certainly how
What were you going to ask?
I was going to say that we should say a little bit about John.
Yeah,
we even...
I thought about that too. I was like, maybe we should have done that first at the top.
That was inappropriate intro to me.
Yeah.
I fly by my instincts here and there sometimes.
You did it right. I'm feeling like let's...
So, John Lutz, you are you're a writer for Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
You are featured on the TV show 30 Rock.
Yes.
You play Lutz on 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm. It's a stretch.
Yeah.
And then in improv, you're part of the group Four Square, which plays as Two Square or Three Square, depending on how many of you are around, which is a show that started in Chicago and just did...
Two Square last week, and you're doing it not this week, but next week.
Right.
And I'm in improvise with Second City and with I.O.
Yeah.
And you perform here in New York with ASCAT. Okay, good. I feel like that's
great. So that's all out of the way. Great.
Yes. Now, back to your dates.
Yes. No.
So how do you get from there to, was it Second City that you started studying?
It was Improv Olympic.
Okay.
I started because I lucked out because I went to, at Valpo, they had such a small theater department that I was able to get into it relatively easy because usually if you're not into it by your freshman year. Right. You'll never get a part.
Right. Okay.
It was so small, but a really good theater department, an awesome theater. But and I was one of the only kind of character-y actors they had.
Okay.
So I lucked out and got some parts and some plays, and my acting teacher was very supportive, and she literally called up Second City and was like, "Hello, this is Betty Ann Leesburg Lang. I'm calling on behalf of John Lutz. He needs to be working there at Second City." And I'm sure what happened was the person who answered the phone was like in reception and just like, "Oh, yeah, he needs to be working here.
Great, yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great. Right. Well, send him over." You know, that kind of, have people like, it's almost as bad as, it was wonderful for me. She really was supportive, but it's almost like your mom was calling saying, "My son John's really funny. He's got to be on the main stage." So I lucked out and did all that and then decided to move out to Chicago after college.
Okay.
And take classes at Second City, but I was too afraid to move into the city.
Okay.
Huh. So I moved in with a roommate of mine from college. He was working out in the suburbs of Chicago, and I wanted to be in Chicago. So we found like a middle ground where his job was like a half hour away, and Chicago was like a half hour away. Mm-hmm. And for 2 years, I kind of drove in. Because also in Schaumburg, there used to be a Second City out there, mm-hmm. and right when I moved, it closed.
Oh, okay.
So I was kind of bummed out about that.
Right.
And then Second City was like, you need to take all these prerequisite like A through E classes before you can get to level one.
Right.
And that I read the descriptions of those, and I'd taken acting classes in college, and it was a lot of the things like, fill yourself up with sand and walk around like you're a kangaroo, you know, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that stinks. Yeah. I don't want to have to go through that.
I was terrible at that shit in college. I did not understand it at all.
It was all stuff that's like, I'd rather just get to it. So instead I went to Improv Olympic because if you took a year of improv somewhere else, you could skip all that.
Oh, okay.
So I figured I'd take a year at Improv Olympic and then go to Second City later. I'm kind of rambling around where everything was going, but I basically read Truth in Comedy, Sharna Halpern's book, and saw Chris Farley's picture on the back, and that's what made me go to Improv Olympic.
Right. Huh.
And then I never took classes at Second City because I just started taking classes at Improv Olympic and was there for about 2 years taking classes there, took some classes at the Annoyance Theater, and then just never got around to doing Second City classes.
Right. Okay. Is it, I guess the things overlap, I get a sense, more in Chicago than here? Like right now the improv communities, I mean all the people overlap here in New York, but like the schools are really separate.
Yeah,
and like
the theaters and the schools are separate. But
I feel like the walls are up a little bit higher for whatever reason. I don't know. But I always felt like in Chicago it was a little bit more fluid, maybe because everything's just bigger and it's been around longer or something.
When I was there, it kind of started to be that way because originally it was Improv Olympic hated Second City. Second City hated the Annoyance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then during Pinata Full of Bee time, all the people like Kevin Dorff and Adam McKay and all these people were coming out of UCB.
Yeah.
And then like McNapier started directing from the Annoyance.
Right.
And then everybody was just like, oh, we're not in competition with each other.
Yeah,
we should
we're doing
be
the same thing.
Like using each other to make it better.
Right.
So when I was there, it was very much like people would take classes at every school and, you know, kind of be at Improv Olympic, but then also do stuff at Second City and then do shows at the Annoyance and
Mm-hmm. So what time was this happening? Like when were you like doing tons of stuff at IO? When were you taking classes?
I started in 96.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I got put on a team after my third class, so that was probably, you know, 6 months, 7 months.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then that was Valhalla, which was the team I was on for 6 years, didn't get moved around at all. That was my first team.
That's unusual, right?
Yeah.
It is, and it was awesome because it was an awesome team. It was the best.
So it was a good team, and that got a chance to have a long run. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. We lucked out because back in the day, I sound like an old, old man, Sharna used to keep track of your audiences because there weren't audiences back then.
Right.
Like, there were audiences for maybe the Saturday night shows and the Friday night shows. Mm-hmm. But anything other than that, it was used like pulling teeth to get people to come out.
Yeah.
And so you'd have two-for-ones that everybody would get, and then they would keep track of how many people got their two-for-ones used.
Okay.
Okay.
So our team had awesome improvisers on it, but we also had almost every single person had big families or a lot of, you know, friends who lived in Chicago. So yeah, it would be like one show, it would be all of my family would come.
Yeah. Mm.
Or the next, and the next show, Carlson's family would come. And then Chapman, I mean, his parents even made the Chapman family, the Chapman fan club. They yeah, wore T-shirts.
That's great.
And so I think the reason we weren't that great right off the bat, we had an awesome coach, Liz Allen, but and we were really coming up with group mind, but we really, I think, stayed together because we brought in houses that
yeah,
first year.
Right, right.
When it used to be like you could have five people in the house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you'd have to go outside and canvas, and
yeah,
that stunk.
And so when you were studying at this time, who are the who are your contemporaries? Like, who are the people that are that you're studying with or performing
96,
with?
The ECB left right in yeah, 96, I think, and there was a big yeah, exodus at that time.
I never knew Amy, or I never saw any of their shows. I never saw the UCB shows because
yeah,
they left right before I got there.
Hmm.
So people that I was watching and fell in love with were like Scott Adsit and Tina Fey and Rachel Dratch and Kevin Dorff. Those were the guys who were on the main stage at the time. And then contemporaries of mine, I came in just a little bit after McBrayer. I think McBrayer was there a little longer than me. Pete Gross. I think TJ Jagodowski was there a little bit before me, mm-hmm, maybe a year or so. And I just remember being in, like, my second class, being in a big group workshop of all classes with, like, I remember seeing Jack McBrayer
yeah, mm-hmm,
do a high school mascot thing that I remember, and I was just like, oh, that guy's really funny.
Yeah.
And I think I did some weird doo-wop song with Christina Gaussis and didn't know anybody at all, but it was just kind of like a really exhilarating thing to
yeah,
just, it was a, like, a, it was my second class, and it was like all, it was about 100 people all doing music.
Wow.
Wow.
And a side note to that, my first class, I was late because I was in the suburbs.
Right.
So I was a half hour late. It was a 7 o'clock class on a Wednesday night, I believe. And Sharna, I walked in and Sharna looked at me and she goes, "You're late. That really pisses me off." And then I sat down and then did the class. And I was like, okay, second class, I got to be here early.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So I lived in the suburbs, and I thought, well, I left at 6,
yeah,
and I got there at 7:30 because of traffic. So
right,
I'm going to leave at 5
yeah,
and get there early, but not never thinking, oh, yeah, 5 is even worse because that's even more commuters.
Yeah.
So I got there a half hour late again, so it was 2.5 hours. And luckily, it was a big enough thing where all those extra you know, students were there for that thing that she didn't notice.
Oh,
oh, good.
And then I just started driving in early and sitting at a coffee shop and reading and then going to class because I was scared.
Yeah. Did you study with Dell while you were there?
I did. I was very lucky to get him.
Uh-huh.
He was really, he taught some of the best stuff where he's just like, the main things I remember from him is just like, why be, don't be unhappy with where you're at in the scene. Like, don't be in a scene going, oh, I hate being here, because
right,
then why are we there?
Right.
Why mm-hmm, are we standing, you know, why you're at a cotillion and you're like, I got to get out of here. Well, then leave. Go
right, right,
to the next thing, because this is boring.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
And he also, like, if you're going to play a game that exists, know the rules to the game.
Yeah.
Because I think in one, like, we played a game of Risk in one scene where someone
a literal board game, or an activity.
Yeah, he's like, if you're gonna
like
do something, know what you're talking about if you're gonna start doing that. Because there was a bingo thing in the same set. We did a really bad version of Risk, and then a really bad version of bingo. This girl who I was in class with, she was like calling the numbers, and she was just like, Z 14. But he was a really funny person, and also really like good at seeing it, but still also like a little like he was trying to quit smoking So he would smoke cigars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
While he would smoke cigarettes.
Wow.
Which I thought was awesome, because it's like, you come in and the guy's like, all right. And you're like, oh, I got to listen to this guy.
Well, one of the things I want to cover is how we eventually get to Foursquare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Foursquare is a group that, I mean, the permutation that plays most often here in New York is Two Square.
Which is you and Peter Gross.
Mm-hmm. And it was me and Back It All for a while.
Yeah.
Oh,
when
right.
Back It All was here.
Yeah, he's not in New York anymore.
No,
right?
He's
yeah.
in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
When Two Square came to New York, it definitely blew everybody away. I mean, some of the nerds had heard of Foursquare, but like, it's different when you hear about something than when you see it. And,
yeah.
And the fluid transitions and the shapelessness of the show and still being really good, it becomes a show that everybody talks about and certainly everybody likes to see.
Yeah.
But
and
I know
still,
that it was already,
it's still blowing people
still,
away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I know this is like already a fully formed thing that had happened in Chicago for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to talk about how that happened.
Sure. Well, we were all four of us. It was me, Dan Back It All, Pete Gross, and Rob Janis. All were working in some way at Second City. Rob and I were in the touring company together, Green Company. And Back It All was, I think, on the main stage at the time. And Pete was on the ETC at the time, I believe. And we all were kind of unsatisfied with the improv that was happening at Second City.
Right.
Because at Second City, you're doing a different style of improv a lot of the times because you're using it to create material.
Yeah.
And you're also going at it like, here's an idea, let's improvise it, and then we'll script it.
Right.
So it's a different, it's a little more worky.
Yeah.
And it can become a little easy because you know kind of tricks to make audiences like it.
Right, okay.
So we were kind of dissatisfied with that. And so we, three of us, myself, Rob, and Pete, were all in JTS Brown together, which was a group that was 12 people. Sudeikis was in that as well, Christina Gausis, Sarah G. And that was a group that was kind of formed, but we wanted to be like kind of like Jazz Freddy, or Los Caz, or those kind of shows, Close
okay.
Quarters. And so we set out to do that show, and Craig Kukowski directed it. And it was all about transformations, and all about just doing the most bizarre things and weird, like, we had a lot of things that we were like, okay, this is one of our things that we can do, is we just repeat a scene, a short scene over three times, but do it with different emotions. And so we rehearsed a bunch of these aspects of things that we just knew if it happened, we never had to talk about it because we rehearsed them all and we were all on the same page of that stuff.
Okay.
So it would look like all of a sudden we're just doing this thing, but we knew it was a technique that we had set up.
Right. Wait, now this is
JTS Brown.
JTS Brown.
Okay. And it was unwieldy because it was 12 people,
yeah.
And it was some of the best shows I've ever been in and some of the worst pieces of horse shit I've ever been in. I think Tina Fey and Steve Higgins and some SNL people came and saw a JTS Brown that was one of the biggest messes of a show ever. And Tina is always like, well, you were good in that show, Lutz. And I was like, and I know she doesn't remember a thing
yeah.
I did. She's just being very nice.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it was garbage. But we love the idea of the transformations and then not having to and being able to do anything and being able to be like in a scene and someone's like, oh, the pizza's here. Go into the door, and the pizza guy enters, but once the guy enters the scene, it's a completely different scene.
Hmm.
And then when the guy who was the pizza guy, who's not that, but leaves the scene, then you go back and you have the pizza.
The people who were waiting for the pizza.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like a lot of that kind of, like, just unspoken, you can pop out into a scene real quick and come right back, all that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool, fun stuff, just being on the same page and not... not having to think about it.
Not having to overly
right.
telegraph it or table talk it or like
if something
overly
new,
announce it.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. Kukowski's thing was, if something new happens, follow it because that means something's changed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If something completely and totally is different, like if you're in a scene that's taking place in the Wild West and someone comes in and talks very differently from that,
yeah.
you know you're not in that scene anymore. So.
Right.
Take a breath.
So don't be freaked
that.
Out by it. Don't stop
don't,
and ask.
Don't
and call
it out.
Just like,
yeah,
it's
don't try to shoehorn it into
right.
the reality that you
exactly.
think you're in, but follow it into
yeah.
that reality.
And let the person who made that choice kind of lead you for a little bit, and then once you take 2 seconds to think about it, you'll be like, oh, we're in this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you may never know, and later on in you talk about it later, and they're like, oh, what were you doing? It's like, oh, this. I thought you knew you were playing it just the right way, but it's just because you faked it and you didn't call it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the show was a mess because it was too many people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was we wanted to do something like that, but with four people.
Yeah.
And back at all, watched that show a lot
when
it was up. And so we thought, well, why don't we try and do a four-person version of that?
Right.
And that's kind of where we started with the idea that my biggest thing about the show is there's no judgment at all.
Okay.
You don't judge any move that you do, or you don't judge any move that anybody else does, because every move is right, and you'll follow it no matter what.
Right.
So it frees you up as a performer to just try something.
Mm-hmm.
And because I feel like judging other performers is just as much a problem as judging yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
And feeling foolish
across the board in any kind of improv situation that you're in.
So it's the best, because then you can do anything, and then you can be dancing. Like last night we did the show and it was just us dancing around. Somebody started dancing and you just do that for a second. And then come back, and you'll find, so you'll go to the next thing or you'll come back to the other thing, but you don't worry about where's it going, what is he doing, what's happening, you just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really opens up to so many other possibilities that you'll land on things that you would never have come across if you didn't.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. So when the four of you got together and started doing this, was there a similar kind of rehearsal process of figuring out that shared language with the four of you, or
when we started, we really did it. We self-directed.
Uh-huh.
So we each directed one. We went through. Like I would direct a rehearsal, then the next time it'd be back at all. We'd all bring in things that we loved about the other shows or different shows, stuff like that. And then we had...
Can I ask you, year is this happening? And, where were you in your different communities? Like, were you teachers? Were you senior members of,
I think I was in the touring company at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't 100% remember. I want to say this was around, 2002 or 2003.
Okay.
So this is, after I'd been in Chicago for, 7 years.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And... and then those guys were on, a couple of them were on stages. So it'd be the kind of thing where they would do their shows, and then we'd leave after their shows and come and do a show on Sunday nights at 11:15.
Right.
And when we started, there was no audience at all.
You do these shows at I.O.?
Do these shows at I.O.
I think it's really cool when a group carves out a new time slot.
It was the best because we had few people at our shows. Yeah. And then to see it grow was just awesome. And now it's a regular slot. It's the after Sunday, Second City people come back and do something at Improv Olympic.
Yeah.
Kind of made Second City mad that we didn't do it at Second City.
I'm sure.
And we were well...
When would you have done it, though? You're going to have another show?
Well, it created a thing. It created a Tuesday improv show for a while at Second City on one of the side stages because they were we can do this too. it's the best thing. We did a Foursquare in L.A. a couple months ago when all four of us just happened to be in town. We didn't even know it was all happening.
Yeah.
And then we set up a show for the next night at Second City, the Second City space out there, and did a show.
Cool.
Totally impromptu and super, just the best. It's just the best.
So a lot of it is, just to kind of talk it through, if you and I are doing a scene, I'll get some kind of or give you some kind of cue with, a facial expression or a look, or you'll pick up something about something that I'm doing that kind of says we're transitioning to a different scene now.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, it's a simple way to do that would just be instead of me talking like this right now, all of a sudden I go, well, I think it's going to, and that's enough to be or just walking around, or just doing something, repeating, if someone says a word and then you just start repeating the word, and then you just do kind of a weird, almost pattern game.
Yeah.
Out of it.
Then you know you've switched into something.
Right. Yeah.
And I first saw T-Square was you and Dan, and I loved the couple that I saw, and I know it's different every time, but for whatever reason they both started with a lot of short things.
Mm-hmm.
To get the suggestion, it would be you'd say something, he'd answer, you'd say something, a little work, And then, like, one of you would just sort of pivot to the left, or this is what it seemed like to me, would pivot to the left or right, like, all of a sudden it's facing abruptly a different direction, mm-hmm. and the other person would, like, peel off and then come around mm-hmm. the other side and was like, oh, it's new. This is a new yeah. thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing I love, and that's what's hard sometimes is I think this is going to be really nerdy improv.
This is
now.
The great place to do it, yeah.
I think we, as improvisers, have moved beyond the tag out.
Yeah, me
I think
too.
The tag out is something that was a way, when it first was discovered, it's like, oh, this is a great technique to let the other player know that I'm moving them out of a scene and let the person who's staying in the scene know they stay, yeah. and then I'm coming in and they're staying the same character. It was a great way to convey that. But I think we're so savvy to improv now, just in improv has been around for a lot longer.
Yeah.
That I think you can convey that same stuff by just stepping in front of the person who you want to tag out or addressing the person, like yeah. making eye contact
yeah.
and starting to talk to them, and then the other person will know to peel off
yeah, to be
rather
gone.
Than get like a hard like
yeah.
on the shoulder.
Yeah.
You can, and then, and it just looks, it, I feel like then it's even more amazing to the audience where they're
definitely.
Like, what's happening? What is this? How do they know that? Well, it's not that hard.
Right.
Right.
If you're just
but
aware.
It'll look better. And
it looks
there
more
is something,
theatrical.
Yeah, there is something sort of just artificial about the abrupt stopping mm-hmm. and the moving and the mm-hmm. acknowledging
right.
that breaks it.
And sometimes I think that's good, but I also think that if you're just a little more in tune to the other player, if you can convey that without mm-hmm. having
to Well, just like
to
tag
do...
outs, if you rehearsed it and you learned that that's something that can happen mm-hmm. and you're on the lookout for it, I bet you it wouldn't be that.
But
and
not like, having a tag out is a way to challenge yourself
yeah.
as an improviser to kind of grow.
And also cut twos, like I think it's a great tool and it really leads the audience into it, but sometimes like with Foursquare we would do cut twos but we wouldn't say cut two
yeah
and then we'd pop back and then it's almost like the audience is catching up to you
yeah
and you're catching up to it as well. That's the best yeah. thing about Foursquare is like mm-hmm. as a performer you're still catching up to it as it's happening
yeah
and then the audience is kind of more active in figuring it out a little bit. And they're along for the ride as much as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nerdy.
Yeah. Great nerdy. So here's a question. I don't even know if this is an answerable question. If a group who's at home, I don't know where people are listening to this, but if people were listening to this.
Running at top speed.
Right. And we're like, I want to get a couple of friends together and try to do this kind of thing. And they're just getting together and either doing it without a coach or with a coach, or let's say they're doing it without a coach. How do they know that they're doing it right or doing it totally wrong? You just kind of trial and error it, I guess?
I don't think there is any right or wrong. I think that's the best part of it.
Uh-huh.
You're just doing it.
Yeah.
And you figure out what works best for you. The only thing that I would say is just there should never be any judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That you, if you remove all judgment from anything, it's always going to be right.
Right.
And then it's all individual. It's all different
mm-hmm.
For whoever's performing it.
You know, I think it's hard about that note. This is maybe going to reveal like a weakness in my own like performing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a safe space, Will. So.
Okay, well, just let me get
we
this
are
out.
In a tent.
Yeah, we are literally in a cloth fort. No judgment. I mean, I, of course, totally agree. And I have been and have seen like that support can go away without you realizing it. And groups need to kind of fight to get it back and to remember to just accept everything and to trust it and justify it later. But something that I think inadvertently fights that is when you want a show to be funny, I guess basically here we use the term the unusual thing so much
mm-hmm,
and
sure.
to be aware of the unusual thing, which is obviously extremely useful to isolate what's funny about a scene. But it sometimes turns people into judgment machines, not
sure.
at first about the people. They're just trying to be aware of the weirdness of an idea.
Right.
But inadvertently coming along with that, you sort of become a commenter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the trick is to not comment on it, but just recognize it and then play it.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing. I think it is super tricky. That's just like getting to know the communication you have with somebody and then kind of shutting up for a half a second as
yeah.
opposed to going, well, I know what's happening now, so I'm going to call it out.
Yeah.
Because that kind of almost ruins it to some point.
Yeah.
And then there's also, but I know that UCB is also, if you ever watch the you know, like Ian and Besser and yeah. those guys actually play, is that they know how to do it in a way that it's always coming from a character.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than just jumping at it and going,
I totally
here's
agree.
What it is.
Yeah.
And so when you...
If you copy just the surface of that, yes. you're missing a lot
And they're
of it.
Masters at it.
Yeah.
And I don't even pretend to know how to do, because I play with them some... I played with them in L.A., and I'm standing there like, I did... Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, tag me out. Thank you. You guys know what's happening. And that's,
yeah.
and that's also just because those guys are on the same page with each other.
I mean,
so well
so
that they
hours.
Don't...
Oh, sure.
They, yeah. can't, they can look at each other and know,
yeah.
oh, I'm going to be mad at you about this,
yeah.
and then you're going to keep making me mad, and then... Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
they're like two moves ahead of it at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that comes from, because those guys, just like you know, you with Backdoll and those other guys, have that kind of set communication from the experience of playing yeah. together for so long.
And then,
those guys have the same thing on a different level.
Exactly, and the best thing is that once we got to that point, then we started fucking around a little bit.
Because mm-hmm.
then it would be like, in the middle of a show, you would make a move.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one time I made a move, and Backdoll was like, no, I'm not doing that. And that was fun. That was fun
yeah.
for me, because then that became part of the show.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite moments in the show was, that just reminded me of something. We were in the middle of a scene. There was a drunk guy at the table, like, right in front of us on the
yeah.
stage.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, when's this going to get funny? And so... Backdoll and I broke out of the scene a little bit, and we were like, hey, just relax, it'll be okay. And he's like, is that funny? And he just wouldn't stop. So Backdoll and I led him out and, like, pretty much kicked him out of the theater.
Yeah.
But in a presentational way, well, that all four of us were kind of on board with.
Yeah.
And then we walked back to the stage, and then Backdoll and I picked up the scene exactly where we left it off.
Yeah.
Ugh.
You know, like 6 minutes earlier
uh-huh.
before the drunk guy started. And it was, by the way, it was a bad show up until that point. And then that moment actually kickstarted the last, like, 20 minutes of the show to be
into
awesome.
Man, I love that. I love that stuff.
And it was just, it's just like, I don't know. I just remembered that story.
Yeah, I love it when seeing people who have the ability to kind of get distracted by something and then pick up exactly where they left off with things and
yeah.
just keep going, you know.
It's a lot of messing around, too, because you mess around with the space, you mess around with the form,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's, like, if you, any time we would do it in a different space, it'd be fun, because when we did it in the Chicago Improv Festival, there were mics on the stage, so we would use those, and it would
yeah.
never be, like, planning ahead of time, I'm going to go use that mic, but if
yeah.
something was inspired...
That's a good planning ahead voice.
Yeah, thank you.
yeah, yeah.
But if something was inspired, it would, and it fit right, then you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it, yeah, is.
What are some of the best shows or people that you've ever seen? Like, especially as you were learning it and sort of like getting
mm-hmm.
better,
mm-hmm.
who's people that you would watch to be like inspired, or maybe there were shows where like, oh, this is a must see show.
Right.
Yeah.
Scott Atzett was amazing because he's an amazing actor, improviser. I thought he was one of the best people. I would put pretty much in terms of people I watched growing up. Him and Stephanie Weir are
oh, yeah.
the two best improvisers and actors I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Stephanie and Dassey, Weird Ass.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Was
oh,
a
Weird
great
Ass.
Show.
Amazing
yeah.
show. Yeah.
They're so good. Dazarinsky, which
yeah.
is Tellerico, Craig Kowski, and Bob Dassey
right,
is amazing.
Right. They did that in LA some
yes,
maybe
I
a
just
lot,
saw
maybe
it.
Just
I just saw
LA.
It when I went to LA, and it was just as good as it used to be.
Oh, really?
It's just so
That's
good.
Amazing.
Wow.
Let's see. I'm trying to think. Well, I would drive down and see the sets when it would be like Tina Fey and Atzett and Dratch and all those guys.
Where would that be?
That would be at Second City
okay,
after.
Mm-hmm.
And I would drive down. It would be 40-minute drive from the suburbs. I'd drive down for a 30-minute set and then
yeah.
drive back. I remember bringing my roommate at the time, and he was like, it was not the best set. And he's like, I'm never coming back. Come on, you can do it. But I would drive down. Any chance I got to either Improv Olympic or Second City to just watch sets.
Mm-hmm. And here's what I didn't ask you. I don't know if you have an answer for this, but was there ever like a teacher or a class that helped you through like breakthrough moments, or was it just sort of an accumulation
yeah.
of time?
Mm-hmm. Well, Liz Allen is the best. She was the best coach possible.
I've yeah. heard that so much about her. I've never
she
got a chance to work with her.
She is all about group mind, and she's really lovey-dovey,
yeah.
and she... made me so mad sometimes because it's a lot of very, you know, crunchy, like, love, and they're all connecting in the back of the brain.
Coach?
Yes, and I would roll my eyes at her a lot, and she'd be like, "Don't roll your eyes at me." And because we it would just be like, "I just want to do funny stuff." She's like, "It's gonna. You don't need to do funny stuff. You need to be a good improviser because you're all funny people. If you're a good improviser and you're a funny person, you're going to be excellent improvisers."
Right.
And she used to always say we needed to Valhalla needed to come in like pirates, which meant if you're pirates and you're touting how good you are and you're coming at and you're like, "We're going to attack you. We're coming. We're coming."
Yeah.
Then the other ships are going to be like, "Oh, here they come," and blow you out of the water.
Okay.
If you come in and sneak in like pirates, all of a sudden they'll be like, "Oh, where'd these guys come from?"
I see.
Because there were some teams there at the time at Improv Olympic that were like really like, "We're the best," you know, making like, you know, cards, postcards, like, "We're the," you know, and it's like, "We're awesome, we're awesome." And then they like fizzled out.
Yeah.
And she was like, "You'd rather be the kind of person," and I take this with my whole life, "You'd rather be the kind of person who all of a sudden sneaks up on people and is like, where'd this show come from?"
Yeah.
"It's been here for a long time. We just weren't like, you gotta see our show."
Right.
And she just made it more about the group than about the individual.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's why the Valhalla was so good.
Well, so I've never seen Valhalla. What was it like? What was the vibe of the team like? Probably changed a lot over 6 years.
It was pretty much there were seven people who were in it the whole time, and then there were like two or three people who shifted in and out.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But that was it. Was basically, I don't know if you'd, it's Matt Chapman, Jim Carlson, myself, Craig Euler, Sarah G, Molly Erdman, Mike Abdelsayed, there were other people.
We've tried to do this before, naming the rosters of teams that we know cold.
Yeah.
When you try to do it like on the spot, and it's hard.
But those
drop somebody.
Those were like the main core of the team, and that's what made it so good was that it was always kind of a same core of people, and if we ever brought anybody in, they were already close friends of ours and knew the show was good, or the group was good in a group mind sense.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the shows were very organic openings.
Okay.
Pretty much straight Heralds.
Uh-huh.
Organic opening, three scenes, organic games, three scenes, organic game, kind of then a montage of connections.
Yeah.
And our games were so organic, where it would be like somebody would just walk out in the middle of the stage and start spinning around.
Wow.
And then we would all kind of join it, and then it would happen, and there might not be any laughs, and then it ended, and we'd just dissolve into a scene.
Yeah.
And then three scenes later, we would say, it would be appropriate to be like, "Well, okay, so after we get through this car wash, we're going to go to the party," and then the two people would get in the car, and then it would spin around and kind of explain what that thing used to be before we even knew it. And people, you know, it was that kind of cool group mind stuff. It was, we never did the, "All right, class, get in here," or we need,
"Let's go down the road and all say increasingly funny things."
Exactly.
On this.
It was never that, and it was almost in some ways easier because you just kind of followed what somebody else did.
Yeah, you trust in the group and the other people that you're performing with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to, this was something Pete reminded me last night. I, for the first 50 shows, I wrote notes about every show.
About the
every
Horse
Herald,
shows
every
or
Herald
or
when I Valhalla. First started, Valhalla. Yeah. And so I have a book of all my classes, and I took notes, and I was very, like, really super earnest about it, but also kind of cocky.
Yeah.
And then, like, being, you know, saying things like, they had us walk into a room and pick up a baby and then put the baby down. Mine was the best, you know, in a class. You know, like, stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I had a whole graph for the first 50 shows. I graded all of them, all of our shows, and I wrote out a graph that showed how we did for our first 50 shows
based on your own grades.
Based on my own grades.
Yeah.
So while all this stuff is happening, are you also
lame?
It is lame. I have notebooks like that too.
Yeah, but not
like
that. I think I wrote for half a page one day, and then I'd be like, "Fuck this."
Right. Yeah. Maybe the first three classes, and then that was it. So are you also at the same time writing sketch shows or?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to get into Second City, and then I didn't get in the first two times I auditioned. And then three people from Valhalla and another guy, we all kind of wanted to write a sketch group together. So we formed a group called Those Guys and put up our own show, and we were like, we want to write a show that's better than the Second City show.
Mm-hmm, okay.
And so we put it up at Improv Olympic, and it was just our own sketch, and we did two different shows, and that ran for about 2 years on Fridays and Saturday nights. And so that was like my first writing experience. It was just five white guys
right.
who were in their mid-20s. Oh, all thank this God. Silence.
Finally, give them a voice.
Yeah.
Let them say
voice.
Something
yeah.
new.
Yeah.
Oh, good. But it was really, really, really fun. And then from that, I got hired into Second City, and then you write some stuff. And then we did get to write an original review, finally, in the touring company my last year. And then from there, I got hired.
And there you got called out to SNL.
What improv are you doing nowadays? Like, what's where can people see you if they want to see you?
Well, I do ASCAT when I can.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How often does that end up being?
That's maybe two times out of the month.
Oh, okay.
And I may go for the first show, and then I'm not the second show because I'm married and I have to do other things. I love performing, but sometimes it's
you have to have a life outside
yes,
of that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'll probably do it a little more this summer because when you're working, it's harder to have that one day off.
Yeah.
And then we'll be doing Two Square on and off for the next month or two. I think in July we might even get a couple more spots. And so I don't know when those will be. I know they're Thursdays, the last two Thursdays of this month, and then in July another couple here and there.
Yeah.
But that's about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else do we have to cover, John?
So you're also on 30 Rock, and you're on 30 Rock with a lot of the people that you talked about that you were in admiration and grew up with and watched as performers. So you got 30 Rock because because Tina Fey knew you from Chicago
and admired
your work.
She just... she admired my work.
She also knew you from Saturday Night Live.
She just, it was the best thing ever. I still can't believe I get to do shows with Scott Adsett and Tina. Because those were the people, like, I was...
I was going to ask you.
It was crazy. I was so nervous when, I love, and Jack McBrayer is, like, more fun because I've known him for so long. But, like, Tina and Adsett were, like, way up here.
Yeah.
And, I was so nervous when I started working at SNL with Tina, just because I knew how awesome she was.
Yeah.
And I was more nervous with her at the rewrite tables than I was meeting any famous people.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah.
That was no big deal for me. I was like, oh, okay, this is a famous person. You know, there's some that I was, you know, like when you meet Robert De Niro, it's like, wow, that's a big deal.
Right.
But Tina was the one I really got nervous around.
Uh-huh.
And, it's ridiculous that I get to work with her and that I'm on that show.
I love it when sort of like improv nerds or like people who have gotten really into a particular scene, they get sort of wowed by the unexpected thing. You'd be like, oh, I got to do ASCAT. Who was there? Well, yeah, these people from SNL, whatever. Oh, but then like my improv teacher from like 4 years ago, I did a scene with her or whatever.
Yeah. How did you get over that fear of
just being around.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's super nice, so it wasn't like she was like aloof or mean to me. It was just it was all in my own head.
Right.
And then it's just, you know, I think after 1 year, it was a little bit better. Like that first 8 shows I did, I was pretty nervous.
Yeah.
And she was awesome to me because the reason I'm on 30 Rock is because she just asked me to be an extra in the writer's room for the pilot.
Oh, wow.
And without anything else, she's like, we might make it a part. I don't know, but we just wanted to have funny people in the writer's room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I said yes to that because I think she did an interview a while ago where she was just like, saying yes to things is what gets you where you're going. Because SNL came and said, would you like to write for us? And she's like, yes.
Yeah.
And then Weekend Update, you want to do that? Yes. And not knowing that you can do it, but saying yes to when opportunities come up, you should do it. And that was in my head when she asked me to be an extra on a pilot. I was like, well, yes, immediately, of course. And then after that, they started just giving me lines, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And the
well,
fact
I think
that
those
she
are
calls
easy
me
things
Lutz.
To say yes to. I would say yes, yes to many of those things also. But I mean, yeah. It's a lot of all the things you did in Chicago too. Like, yeah. Let's go after this show and meet and do this one, and let's go drive 40 minutes and watch this show.
Yeah, you get that kind of attitude about it from being in communities like this, where your friends who are hilarious and who you love performing with are saying, "Hey, you want to go do this show, or will you do this show with me? You want to write a show together, or you want to develop this improv form?" Yeah. And so you get that mentality of like, "Yeah, you're my friends. I want to do this. I say yes to this." Whereas if Will asked me if I wanted to climb Mount Everest, I would say
no right away.
I don't think so.
Or do you want to go to Starbucks?
That one I'd be more prone to say yes to.
You wouldn't do it.
There's no possibility of me having a coronary hemorrhage on.
You still wouldn't do it.
Mount in Starbucks.
Mount Starbucks.
Mount Starbucks. It's one of the most dangerous mountains. Mount Starbucks. Everything is really overpriced.
There's a million of them.
Okay, so we covered 30 Rock, and SNL, and all that stuff. Anything else?
My own pride in this podcast, I just want to make sure the vast majority of our talk is about the improv scene and not the amazing shows that John is on. Only for our own nerd pedigree.
Oh, well, definitely.
I'm counting in my head. But we're safely there.
Honestly, I am much more nerdy about improv because I still get fired up about it and excited.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when I teach, I don't teach often, but when I teach, I remember, I'm always like, oh, I don't want to teach.
Yeah.
It's such a, it's just a pain in the butt. And then I get there, and 5 minutes after it, I'm super excited and into it. Because it's like no other drug of just how, because it's going to be different every time. And just when it works, it's the best, it's the most amazing feeling, whether you're in this show or you're directing the show or you're teaching a class or whatever, when it works, it's awesome.
That's the thing that I wanted to ask you about is teaching improv and working with groups. I feel like a lot of teachers have like that one thing that they love to kind of convey to a group when they're working with them. What are the things that you like to pass on to groups or make sure the groups are doing?
I think for me, it's mostly being like taking the blinders off. Of what this is something Craig everything I teach I've stolen from other teachers.
You're gonna say Craig Kukowski?
Craig Kukowski, yes. Thing? Mm-hmm. Is take the blinders off and don't be focused on your own agenda. Be aware of every little thing that happens, so that even in a scene as simple as two people sitting, just the way your scene partner sitting says something, just the way you're sitting says something, and then don't be afraid to use that as your inspiration, because then it's coming from true improv. Every little thing, the way someone's voice changes, the way they carry themselves. If someone's carrying themselves a certain way and they say a certain line, use all that information and that'll inform your choice, and it makes it so much easier for you as an improviser than having to pull something out of your ass.
Right, right.
And are there particular exercises that you use to do that, or is it just getting people to be more focused on what they're doing?
I kind of do JTS Brown stuff sometimes, where it's two people sitting in a chair and they have to do a completely silent scene.
Right.
And or two people having to do a five-line scene, and then the scene has to repeat and a different emotion, and then you just pay attention to what the other person's emotion is and match it. It's a lot of matching energies and taking time, and also using the space, like making it real for yourself, object work stuff, because that'll, if you pick up a mug and it's full of iced tea or it's full of coffee, that'll inform
something else in your
improv. So it's like just making choices. And also, that's another big thing, is making assumptions about things. Because the second you say, oh, Dr. Reynolds, that makes it true. Now your scene partner's name is Dr. Reynolds.
Right.
If you never say it, then it could be anything, and we don't know, and you're in that ambiguous land.
Right.
But if you're like, every line, it's like, I'm assuming that we're in a pizza shop right now. So I'm going to say, I love this pizza shop. And then the second you make that assumption, it makes it real. And then you're not, and then three or four lines into a scene, you've already got all these things that you were already there, but you didn't, they weren't solid until they were said or conveyed.
I like the word assumption more than choice in a way. It sounds like, that's more what it feels like when you're doing it.
Yeah.
like choice sounds so final and like something that you do when you're writing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But assumption is more like kind of a vibe influenced word.
Yeah, it's like looking at what you're doing and
based on what I'm feeling.
That's stolen from Noah Gregoropoulos.
Oh yeah. Is it?
Yes.
But he did Close Quarters, right? He's Close Quarters.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
He's another teacher that I had that was very influential in my performance. But those are the two big things, I think, is making assumptions and just being aware. Because then also they go hand in hand, because then you're being aware of all the assumptions that are being made that are even nonverbal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
I know things you said earlier are a big part of what you teach, because you did a workshop last year around Del Close Marathon Time where I think you titled it No Judgments, or that was the focus, like not judging yourself or others. And you coached My Herald team with Sue a couple times, and you did a lot of like exercises that would get us to be more fluid about the space, like like the one you were describing before. Two people are here. When a third person enters, it's a new scene.
Right.
When they leave, it goes back to whatever the reality was before that person got there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're good. They're fun. They're fun, and they're easy enough that you feel successful doing it, but they're challenging enough that it wakes you up.
Yeah. Because that's the best thing about improv, is that it's a changing art form that you don't if you don't take risks.
Yeah.
As a performer,
I totally agree.
It'll be the same old boring improv all the time.
I love seeing that evolve.
You have to be surprising yourself and surprising everybody else, but not like trying to do it just to shake things up and be rude about it, but being inspired to do something that looks like, oh, this is a pattern. I'm going to just do something and see if it works.
Right. And it is taking those blinders off and just being aware of like the whole, there's a whole universe of things and assumptions that you could make. And not just the same old, like, oh, well, we're going to go down this particular kind of path that we've gone down a bunch of times before, that everything could be new and fresh and original.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to walk down the same path every time. I'm trying to make my improv show. Every time I do it, I'm like, I'll do what I did last week, but I'm still better.
Mr. Pennyworth is who you're working on.
I'm doing the Mr. Pennyworth character for about, I don't know, 4.5 months.
And if anybody tries to do something different, you kind of
I call it justifying. I justify around whatever they're saying.
Right, you call it justifying. That's not really what it is, but you call it that.
I force it back to what I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. You call it what you want.
I think you call it that just to make yourself feel better.
I make the assumption that the other person isn't worth listening to, and then I force my Mr. Pennyworth character because he's getting better. I'll let the audience be the judge.
There was a guy who used to do that in my first couple of years, who would do scenes in class that would work, and then he was on a team and would start with initiations of the same scene.
I
saw it happen, and a scene partner was just improvising, so he didn't say the lines that were said in class
because
he wasn't in that scene. And the dude still tried to do all the same jokes.
Oh, what a nightmare.
It did not work. It was weird.
Yeah. It
makes me so uncomfortable.
I know. The worst.
I think that's...
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John, thanks so much for coming on and nerding out with us.
Yeah, this is great. Thanks a lot.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Talk about this stuff. So everybody else...
You can see John Lutz in Two Square.
And ASCAD sometimes.
Yeah, ASCAD every now and again. And, of course, on your TV screen.
I think I'm in the marathon with Husky and Seth.
Yeah.
I think it's called Tall, Bald, and Lutz.
That's right.
Like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, Tall, Bald, and Lutz. Yeah. All that information about the marathon will be coming out in a couple of weeks. So you'll get more information on that. So definitely, I think you'll be making a few appearances in and around the marathon,
here and
I think.
I always
keep him in a cage backstage and at random times.
Yeah, just unleash you.
Enter the show, Lutz.
That would be a great just marathon-long game.
He kept like McBrayer like in a glass case and just like Jack or whoever, you know, whatever you like.
You would break the glass case?
Every time.
Because that's probably a little dangerous, I'm saying.
I like theater. You know, you limit yourself how you feel.
That's true. I'm very safe and conservative.
Yes.
All right, so thanks a lot, John.
Oh, my pleasure.
And check out UCBtheater.com for shows that we talked about and Sketchfest and all that
junk. And come back next week for another episode.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.